Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that answers questions about the Christian faith to help you grow from milk to meat, to grow into a wise, skilled, world-changing follower of Jesus Christ. With theologian and pastor Chad Graham, author and pastor Al Degeneau, and your host, Steve Bastian.
Well, we're wandering around, and we got really tired, and we got really hungry, and Chad mentioned that he was actually invited to a wedding today, and it wasn't someone that he even knew, but he got an invitation because he's such a mover and shaker in town. I mentioned that since we're tired and we're hungry, we need somewhere to sit and somewhere to eat, we could kill two birds with one stone.
By crashing the wedding.
And though we completely missed the wedding, we managed to get into the reception, we've sat in the far corner, we've made some piles of free food, we're hiding from all the other guests. Steve, wait a minute, is that part of the cake? Because I don't think they've cut that yet. You need to put that back.
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Actually, this is interesting because this is a bit of a fortuitous situation. Didn't you just get remarried, Steve? Not necessarily to another woman, but you know what I mean? Like, not to a new wife, but just... Didn't you just get married to a church? I mean,
Was Steve trying to have his cake and eat it too?
He's trying to have his cake and eat it too. Aren't you a newly minted church member?
Yeah. Just this last Sunday,
That's awesome.
We didn't have anyone write letters to the church saying that we shouldn't become members. So that was part of the process.
Mine must have got lost in the mail.
I know.
And mine, I'm too far away. It's coming. I promise.
That's okay. I gave you guys the wrong name of the church I'm attending. So. Yeah.
You don't attend Go Stick It Baptist Church?
Oh, no. It was definitely been a process.
Yeah, tell us the story a little bit, because I know there's a bit of a backstory here.
Yeah, well, to talk about membership and explain that it's been a difficult journey, even from childhood. I've always been cautious around this. When I was a kid, my father was part of a church, and he was part of the leadership, and he was a part of church politics, even though he's not a political person at all. He's actually the quiet, he's a true sense, I think he's a ultimate kind of deacon kind of personality. But he was caring, and it was really hard on him, and I could see that as a kid. And then some messed up stuff happening at the church, and it wasn't biblical, it was dealt with in a bad way. They had to let the pastor go, duty issues, and just it was a mess. And this, was compounded because I was good friends with the pastor's son. So, I saw how dirty that could be back then. So then I jumped 20 years ahead. My wife and I, we joined our local church. And, we saw some things that were definitely unhealthy. But, we got involved. We tried really hard to do the right things. Like, we became members fairly quickly. We just got really involved with, things like music and childcare and all the things that we are kind of more gifted at. And, within a few months of me accepting to be part of the leadership team, the wheels started to fall off. Things came forward. It was really tough. The church, basically, within a week, three of elders stepped down. I was the third elder to step down. And we left the church. And the church continued some time in that bad state. But they've moved ahead in good places now. But it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life. I really have to compare it to like a death of a close friend. That was how hard it hit us with having to step away from a church that we loved and we were pouring our time and energy into. And for a while there, I didn't want to touch churches at all. At all. It was my wife was the one that started to actually push me, say, you have to set a good example for our children. We can't just watch sermons on Sunday morning. We can't just watch Chad on Sunday morning on his YouTube channel and call that good.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that one seems like a reasonable exception.
Yeah. Well, it's also, part of that was I was picking and choosing topics I wanted to hear, which might not always be healthy either. So,
man, those two thoughts I completely agree with.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we attended the church. It's about 10 minutes away. We started to go there because Carrie connected with some of the ladies there through one of their outreach ministries, and it wasn't a hip church. It had a lot more gray-haired older people, and it even had an inconvenient service time. It's later. It's hard with young kids when you have a later church service, and you know, the thing that struck me is that the pastor was passionate about the Word of God. He wasn't coming in with cultural relevant stories, and it was just, he was just passionate about the Bible and teaching it, and that, so that kind of caught me. And then that first time I was there, there's a quite an older man, and he's, I really appreciate talking to him now, but he came up and just welcomed us with just genuine, really glad to see you here. And that was really cool. Even though there's probably about a 60-year age gap, I think, almost between us. It's probably more closer to 50, but he, I mean, at that time, he looked like he was, you know, 110 years old.
Did you ask him if it was difficult on the church when the dinosaurs died out?
He probably actually would think that's hilarious, but he's a good guy. But fast forward a little bit of time, and they found out, you know, that I have done a lot of music in the past with churches, so I started to help out a little bit there. Carrie, my wife, got involved with some of the children's ministry aspects, and we just kind of started to go to this church. The whole time, I'm scared of becoming a member. It was like, I am not becoming a member, or no way, because of what happened. Just we wanted that distance from the church. Even one of the elders did speak to me about that. Hey, have you ever thought about becoming a member? And I was able to argue well enough that, you know, we were members when it came to, we're committed to the church. We were under the leadership of the pastor and the elders. We were giving, you know, tithing. We're doing all the right things. But he said, you know, think about it. And then I had to do the worst thing ever. I brought it up with Al and Chad, and they were relentless. And, you know, they started to give some good arguments of maybe I should go a little further. And then other people as well, not just Al and Chad, you know, there's other people too that we talked to. And, you know, God put me in his arm bar and made me start talking about it with my wife. And it's been hard, but we finally gave in. I mean, it almost feels like we gave in because we've been feeling this pressure from what we've been reading, what we've been studying. And so we became official members this last Sunday, and I'm still scared if there is a big issue. In my mini testimony on Sunday morning, I almost said, this church is okay, but now that we're members, nobody better mess this up. I almost said that. I was this close to adding that into my little speech.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so there's still...
You know what they say, Steve? If you ever find the perfect church, don't join it or you'll ruin it.
No. Well, this isn't a perfect church, so I'm okay. But there's still great feelings of... I'm fragile. There's senses of apprehension. But it was really nice that, you know... Several people came up, gave us hugs, sent us Facebook messages welcoming us officially. And so we're now stepping ahead, and we're members and whatever that brings.
You know, it kind of reminds me, the way that you're talking, it almost reminds me of counseling for abuse, you know, where yeah. you have these people that they've gone through a history, whether as children or they've gone through as, you know, adults, a history of abuse, whether it be marital abuse or parental abuse or something like that. And they just kind of have built into them this fear of people, fear of commitment, fear of authority figures, fear of intimacy. And they kind of carry that burden around on their shoulders. And wherever they go, every interaction, every relationship, even healthy, good ones, even ones that say future spouse or their brother, or their good, you know, mother or father, whatever it is, it's always got that cloud. They've always got those dark glasses on because they have that history and everything. It sounds very, very similar. And it sounds like your heart, you know, you gave your heart over and said, here, take it. And it got kind of smushed. And then you brought it back and you had to put it together and ask God to take care of it. And he started to put them healing. And then some other church came up and said, can we hold your heart for you? And you said, I don't think so, you know. And then God's been working on you and say, okay, yeah. No, you can't live like that. You have to give it away and allow other people in. So I it's such an interesting emotional journey that you've been on. This isn't just a do I obey God and is this a practical idea? Is this something that the Bible says so I have to do it? It's a hugely emotional conversation for you.
It is. And there's no way I can pull that out of the conversation because if I just put into logic, it doesn't make sense. There's a huge amount of the emotional and even the interdynamics between my wife and I around this it's hard to get both of us, you know, feeling the same thing at the same time to talk about this because we're both on the same journey. Her father was a elder in churches and is an elder right now of a church, and there's hard stuff that happens there too. And we maybe we're too political or something. We just somehow get to be around it way too often.
Hmm. There is, and we have you to expand on that point just to make it broad for anyone who's listening. Elle brought up rightly that you see this similar thing happen in abuse, and churches, unfortunately, can be spiritually abusive. But there's also the very normal dynamics of relationships and getting a broken heart, even in a healthy relationship, when it simply doesn't work out. And the reality is that also happens in the church. And so if there is an abusive relationship, it's going to be a little bit more of a big deal to get through it. Mm-hmm. If it's an ordinary relationship, it can still feel like a big deal. And that very real human dynamic, I think, needs to be addressed and thought about by churches and leaders a little bit more than we often do. But at the same time, if you never love, you never experience loss. If you never experience loss, they say, then you have never loved. And, you know, by the time you get married and you've gone through some relationship heartache and you have a good marriage now, you know that in the end of the day, it was worth it.
Mm-hmm. So Chad, you know, that's kind of my history. The one thing I really want to bring forward is you had some great points about the biblical history of the church membership. And, you know, I'd love for you to share about that again and just maybe reaffirm me a bit here that I'm not just crazy.
So what I'd like to tell you, Steve, is that you're almost certainly doomed to another disaster. There's nothing redeeming or good about church membership. Anyway,
again.
In the history of the church, one thing we get right is that we get it very wrong.
Often.
No, let me give you a little better answer than that, Steve.
Thank you.
I'm going to do this in two categories, both quite briefly. So if anyone has any question to clarify, just hit me up. The first is just understanding the big biblical picture of the nature of humanity and the story of redemption. Adam was created and placed in the garden with a mission on God's behalf and in our special relationship with God. But in that position and in that place, God recognized it's not good for man to be alone. So he created a partner, a helpmeet suitable to him, an equal partner who was able to work with him in his task. And that was very good. In the fall, something happened. The man and woman, in this case, saw that one another were naked, which is they realized, sorry, that each other, they saw themselves as naked. That is, they saw themselves now as vulnerable, as subject to abuse, as threatened. So what before was perfect harmony and very good now became danger. And so they fled from the eyes of each other and from the eyes of God, and they attempted to cover themselves up. And that's a little bit of the story. You're in a church, somebody sins some way or another, or even possibly just a bad misunderstanding, but you get the sense where that beautiful fellowship is gone, and you get that sense of vulnerability and alienation, and our natural instinct is to cover ourselves. So we need to realize that's the biblical story setting. The whole rest of the Bible is God working to restore that, both vertically and horizontally in relationships. And so God provides covering for Adam and Eve so that they're able to be in each other's presence without shame. God begins to create a people who will be his people in the earth. Ultimately, we know that goes through Abraham, Israel, and so on in the story, through Jesus and those who are now in Christ. And so God has created this people in community all the way along, and he forms them according to community. He formed Israel into tribes that commune together and that had elders over them, and then into cities when they came into the promised land with leadership. And so we see this sort of pattern that God calls a people together, not individuals. That's pretty important, right from creation, right to the biblical story. Now we come to the church in the New Testament, and we are told that God is doing something. Passages, for example, like Ephesians chapter 1, speak about how from all eternity God has had a plan where he is bringing forward a church, the word church really meaning assembly of his people, and he's building them into a holy dwelling place for his presence. In other words, a return to the garden. So the church is to be what Adam and Eve were to have been, because Christ, the last Adam, is the perfect Adam. So Adam, Eve, and their children should have lived in perfect harmony in the garden. Christ and his children are now to live in perfect harmony in the church. So Jesus says, my prayer is that they may be one as you and I are one, Father, and let them be known to the world by their love for one another and those sorts of things. So that's the big picture, human, anthropological, biblical structure. Now we have passages on the church. What are we told as Christians? Well, 1 John 5:1 says, everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been born of God. And everyone who loves the Father loves whoever has been born of him. In other words, how do you know if someone's a Christian? Well, Jesus said, they will know you are my disciples by your love. John wrote, if you are born again, you will love your siblings in Christ. So one of the most defining marks, according to Jesus, the most defining mark of a believer is the love of the brethren. That's really, really important. So we often hear Christians that will say, I like Jesus, I just don't like his followers. Whoa, that's problematic.
Yeah. Falsely quoting Gandhi on that one, I think.
Well, probably, yeah. To some of his followers, you know, all of us are in families. Has anyone ever had a conflict with a sibling? Have you ever thought to yourself, I can't stand my brother or my sister? I think we've all been there. So we know that even happens in families. There's going to be some tension.
Well, I know Crystal has.
Yeah, Crystal's thought that last week, I think. So that starts getting us into the idea of the church. In the big picture of God calling a people to be in fellowship with himself and with each other to restore the harmony of the garden, God calls his disciples to be known by their love for one another, and then he places them in the church. So the Acts account is that when people were saved, they were added, specifically says, they were added to the church, X number of souls. So there was a roster of some kind, because they knew there was 3,000 people in the church in Jerusalem. And when a problem came up at the church in Jerusalem, the disciples were able to call together the full number of the brethren. How did they know what the full number was? There was some kind of a roster. Might have been in people's heads or, you know, informal, formal, who knows. They got them all together, and then they acted in harmony and unison to preserve the harmony of the church, which was being broken up by a controversy. They elected leaders, they acted together, and so on. So we see this nascent development of the church, which then as it expands and goes into other places, Paul, the primary missionary that did it, appoints elders over those churches. And when he speaks to them in Acts chapter 20, he says to them that you are to shepherd the flock which is in your care, over which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. Now the overseers would say, who is the flock under my care? The guy that walked by and looked in the window one day? The guy that came in and sat in the back pew one day? The guy that came and stayed for a week and then left? The guy that came and stayed for a month or a year? How do I know who is my flock? Where is the divisional markers? Mm-hmm. And so there was a way to tell if someone was inside or outside. And in the early church, that marker was baptism. It was such an important thing. If you were baptized, you were saying, I'm dead to my old life and alive to my new life. And if you were a Jew, that meant I'm cut off from the synagogue, cut off from my family, cut off from my heritage, cut off from my social welfare network. And I've entered into a new life. It's very radical. All they had left was the church. Now that's motivation right there. If you leave the church, you'll starve to death and die. There's a conflict in the church. What are you going to do? Man, I'm walking away. Or I better work this out. So, you know, there was this very powerful marker. Now, as we come into our world and our society, we don't have that anymore. We have willy-nilly organizations and all this going on. So churches have formalized the process of church membership in order so that there is a way that the shepherd might know who belongs to the flock and that the flock might know who their shepherds are. So Hebrews chapter 13, 7 and 17 say to us, submit yourselves to your elders. How do you submit yourself to your elders? Well, if they ask you to become a member, you better do it. 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and 12 speak of the unity of the church being a major problem in Corinth. And Paul speaks of the many churches in 1 Corinthians 11, 16. And he says, if anyone is inclined to be contentious, to fight, we have no such practice, nor do the churches plural of God. But in the following instruction, I commend you, because when you come together as a church, that's verse 18. Now, when you come together as one of those churches, I hear there are divisions among you, and I believe it in part, he says. There has to be factions, actually the word heresies, among you in order that those who are genuine may be recognized. So there is going to be conflict in the church on occasion so that the genuine believers will be recognized. How will they be recognized? Because genuine believers love one another and will sort through their issues. So then he says, when you come to the Lord's Supper, here's how you're not being genuine and here's what you ought to do. And then in chapter 12, he says, when it comes to spiritual gifts, here's how you're not being genuine and here's what you are to do. And the main illustration he gives is the illustration of the body. And just to give you the term, because some people say it's not in the Bible, as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. So when we come to the church, we are members of the body. This speaking to the individual group in Corinth. And then it says, the eye can't say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor to the hand to the foot, I have no need of you.
I imagine that like a painter going to his easel. He's got a hand. He can draw beautiful paintings. He has to get to the easel. And he says to the foot, I have no need of you. Now I go to draw. Then he says to the foot, hey, maybe we need to be a body and work together here. And they walk over to the easel and they begin to paint a most beautiful picture. So certainly not Picasso. So this is the kind of picture that the New Testament gives us. It commands us to submit to our elders. It instructs elders to shepherd the flock. It tells us to be one in the body. And we're trying to create that big picture overview of the unity between man and God and man and man that God intended in the garden. And that's to be done in the fellowship of Christ. And so I think theologically, biblical theology, the big picture of it is church membership is the critical expression of our redemption. That's amazing. Mm. Then, as far as commands, we're simply told to do these certain things, to do not forsake the assembly of the brethren. That is, don't neglect going to church. And do it not just to go to church, but it's very specific. That's only the describer. Do not forsake the assembly of the brethren, but gather together all the more as you see the day approaching in order to stir one another up to love and good works. That's the part that's the command. You're not to forsake so that you can serve. And oftentimes we think of the church about me. I should belong. It'd be good for me. Actually, we're not to forsake so that we can serve, because it's the love of the brethren that marks us. The love of the brethren drives us to become church members. And then again, Hebrews 13, submit to your elders. So if the elders put together a process for church membership and you don't submit to it, you're simply disobeying that command. Mm. It might be a human way of doing it, but they're doing something extremely biblical. So I think that kind of covers the biblical pattern there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Steve, in talking about this, like, you've heard Chad's biblical, historical, theoretical side of things. Mm-hmm. And so talking about the body of Christ, you've heard the brain and you've heard the heart. And maybe now I can talk a little bit about the hands, sort of the practical aspect of church membership. How does this actually help you walk with Christ and in your spiritual life? Now, I know that you've seen it done badly and maybe you've even seen it done badly where it's had no impact on someone's life. Mm-hmm. Or like Steve, maybe you've had a bad experience with a church and you're not sure if you want to jump in because you're a bit afraid. I can understand both of those things. Becoming a church member is kind of like getting married. We've all seen dead marriages that have no love left, no passion, yet are just kind of trudging through life with this official agreement that makes it important somehow, but there's no love left. And we've seen abusive marriages where the official commitment makes the relationship more dangerous, in fact, because now there's legal ties and paperwork that leads to this, that has this poisonous situation. Suddenly it's actually a bigger problem. But we've also seen marriages that have been through good times and bad and would champion marriage because it's a gift from God and actually a tool that God uses so that individuals and the whole family can grow closer. So I think being a church member can be sort of experientially like that, beneficial to all and a valuable tool in growing closer to God. And there's lots of examples that I could give, but I'm going to limit myself to three. Okay, so the first one is this. It puts everyone on the same page. Okay, so from a church leader's perspective, church membership is important because it's a way for us to let everyone know and agree with how we do things. So our church has a statement of faith, a code of conduct, a constitution that guides how we run our organization. It's got a bunch of other documents that we've worked out to see how we govern our little community. So when you become a member, you have to go through the membership class where we tell you our history, make you read and study all of our theology and doctrine and documents. You sign off on the code of conduct and you go through the constitution, okay?
Wait, now, which verse is that from?
That's all the verses, Chad. Okay. It's all of them. So everyone's on the same page, right? I'm just restating what Chad has already said. So everyone's on the same page. We're all pulling together. Our teachers are all teaching the same things. Our committees are all supposed to be pulling the same directions. Our corporate decision making is made in a way that we all agree to. And when we want to make a decision, we are all voting for what the church thinks is best, based on what we've agreed on. Okay,
you're explaining the way you put into practice that philosophy of shepherding and relationship.
Practical aspect, yes. Yeah. So add to that the fact that Satan's working hard to get his representatives into the church. Okay, he will send wolves in sheep's clothing. He will send demons dressed as angels to try to corrupt the church from the inside out. All over the New Testament, we're warned about this. We're told to judge people carefully. Church membership is a human, albeit imperfect, way to weed out the Christians from the non-Christians and try to ensure that only believers have influence in the church. Okay, so that's number one. It puts everybody on the same page and tries to weed out those who are trying to get us to write on a different page. Okay, second, it allows us to hold each other accountable. Second practical thing, being a church member allows us to keep each other accountable. So yes, accountability is this biblical concept, and theoretically, I should be able to walk up to any believer in the world, member or not, or read them a verse in the Bible, and show them that they're messed up in some way. Sometimes I do that on vacation. It's fun. But it's not exactly what accountability is all about. Accountability is supposed to be a two-way street. And a necessary requirement for any serious disciple of Jesus Christ is to be held accountable, not just by God, but accountable to the leadership of the church and the fellow believers around us. So the idea here is it's not just me agreeing to hold you accountable because I'm a Christian, because I'm a pastor. It's you agreeing you will let me hold you accountable because we're brothers and sisters in Christ who want the best for each other. And so in our church, the way we do that is we write some stuff down, our beliefs, our codes of conduct, and then we all take the time to sign it together. Every church member can call me to the carpet if I fail in some way, and the same is true for me being able to speak truth into their life. It's a mutual agreement with signatures and paper that shows that we're serious about living godly, biblical lives together. That's why you hear good churches talk about church discipline. Just like in our families at home, there are times that people in the church sin and they need to be disciplined. Becoming a church member allows the church to have another avenue to discipline you according to the biblical standards that you've outlined. Okay? So that's number two. Here's number three. And this is a big one. I think it's probably the one that people don't think about often enough. Third, church membership demonstrates humility. When you become a church member, you're saying that you need other people to help you grow in your faith. You can't and you won't do it alone. You are saying you want to be held accountable. You want to be taught. You're saying that you know that you can't equip yourself, but you need some good teachers outside of you. You can't care for yourself. You need other people to care for you. You're saying that if you're left to yourself, you know you're going to slide into error and sin and that you need others. And so becoming a church member, you're placing yourself under the direct teaching of a pastor or a group of pastors and elders and deacons that you're going to allow to be your spiritual fathers. You're placing yourself as a sheep under a shepherd who is under the great shepherd. It's a huge step of humility to become a church member. And I think that's a huge reason, a big reason why people don't do it. They think they can teach themselves. They can care for themselves. They can hold themselves accountable. They can make up their own councils and creeds. They think they know more than anyone else, that they're untouchable, and somehow they can take on Satan without anybody else's help. So they go and have home church where they set up their own standards, or they go church shopping for some church that fits them best, or they simply go as church consumers that hide in the background, never getting too involved because they don't want anyone in their business. And all of that is built on pride. That pride comes before the fall, and it happens over and over and over and over. This is, I think, one of the reasons for the proliferation of independent churches, is because people don't want to be held accountable. After God created the perfect man in the perfect place in the perfect environment, there was something wrong. Chad said it. Problem was he was alone. We're not meant to do this alone. We need the church, and becoming a church member is a way of acknowledging that. It's a step of humility. That's the three reasons to come to mind today. It demonstrates humility. It allows us to hold each other accountable, and it puts everyone on the same page. There's lots more reasons, I'm sure.
That was excellent.
Yeah, well, that was very good.
There's that makes me think, and to say, El has described for us very well. There are different. Everybody knows there's a little bit different styles of churches out there. El's described a congregational style church that unites around church covenant and documents. There are other ways in which churches have organized, but the principles, frankly, are all the same. The idea is that you're making that kind of commitment. I think one of the things that I would counsel people who are thinking of joining a church or concerned about joining a church today is to take it as seriously as they do any other major commitment in their life. There's a lot of people that will say, well, I joined the church and then I got burned. And then you ask, well, did you investigate the church before you joined it? What'd that look like? And you'll often get, well, I went, people seemed nice for a few weeks. Would you get married after just meeting a girl at Starbucks and talking to her a couple of times? Or would you maybe investigate whether there were some more compatibilities?
Well, okay, that's also a failure on the church's part too. Because the church should be like, okay, hold on, don't become a member yet. you know, just hold on there. Let's get you into a small group. Let's talk about this, right? Yeah, so I agree. There's some failure on both sides.
One little point of history as we close. This is a problem that has gone on since the time of the apostles. Some of you may be familiar with Ignatius of Antioch. He was personally discipled through all of his life by the apostle John. He was his companion for decades. He became, they use the term bishop a little bit different than it's used in some of the hierarchical structures today. He became the bishop, the overseer, the pastor of the church in Antioch. That was the church that Paul was a part of, the big major second largest Christian church after Jerusalem. And he was the main preacher and teacher there while a significant number of the apostles were still alive. He died in 102 AD, a martyr under the Emperor Trajan. So this is a man who has to write to the Ephesian church, the church of the Apostle John, slightly after John's death, we think, maybe a year or two. And he writes to them, "It is proper for you to run together in harmony with the mind of your overseer as you are doing. For your council of presbyters, your elders," I'm translating this so it's a little rough, your council of presbyters, which is worthy of its name and worthy of God, is in harmony to the bishop as a string is on a lyre. L-Y-R-E, kind of lyre. Therefore,
a guitar. Yeah.
Therefore, gotcha. In your unanimity and harmonious love, Jesus Christ is sung. You must join the chorus, every one of you, so that by being harmonious in unanimity and taking your pitch from God, you may sing in unison with one voice through Jesus Christ to the Father, in order that he may both hear you and on the basis of what you do well, acknowledge that you are members of his Son. It is therefore advantageous for you to be in perfect unity in order that you may always have a share in God. However, he says, while I congratulate you who are unified with him as the church is with Christ, he says, let no one be misled. If anyone is not within the sanctuary, he lacks the bread of God. For if the prayer of one or two has such power, how much more that of the overseer together with the whole church? Therefore, whoever does not meet with the congregation thereby demonstrates his arrogance and has separated himself, for it is written, God opposes the arrogant. Let us therefore be careful not to oppose the church in order that we might be obedient to God.
What a great picture. I mean, wow. It's, you know, Jesus talked about how the vine and the branches, right? This is like mm-hmm. the guitar and the strings. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, it sounds better when it's all in tune. And if you think you're a string and you're not on the guitar, if you can make any noise, you can't. You know, it's beautiful. That's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, so church fathers, the good to read people. I especially love these very early guys that I know they're often reflecting the very words and thoughts of the apostles, although not inspired. It's pretty much, you know, the next best thing.
That's great, guys. I appreciate you both spending time talking through it again. I'm a little more reassured again that I did the right thing here on Sunday. And I encourage... if you're listening to this and you have questions about, definitely drop us an email. Go to our website, send us a SpeakPipe page. We would really like to help people with this process. I can speak to how messed up it can be. And
all three of us can.
We all can. You know, all three of us can. A pastor is are immune from all this the messed up side. We are people. Churches are full of sinners, and you know that's the way it is. But. Thank you again,
Speaking
guys.
Of sinners, Chad,
yes.
I'm just noticing something here. Can you check that invitation again one more time just to make sure that we're at the right wedding? Because I'm getting a lot more looks than I usually get.
That's a lot.
Do you know what's going on here is the bride is actually getting ready to throw that bouquet of flowers. Hold on. Let's back away, Al. Here they come. It looks like Steve's going to catch that, but look at those 500 women charging him like football players.
Run, Steve!
Let's get out of here!
Take that bouquet and run, Steve!
Not again!
To find out more about carnivore theology, or if you've got any topics or questions you'd like us to cover on upcoming episodes, let us know by visiting our website, www.carnivoretheology.com. You can also leave a message on our SpeakPipe page. That's at www.speakpipe.com/carnivoretheology. If you like what we're doing, please share with your church and friends. Like us on Facebook, rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. We encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.
Well done, Steve. That was pretty good. I like that.
And I was trying to distract you really heavily.
I felt closer to you. I feel closer to you.
I felt like you were here sitting right beside me, holding my hand on that nice black silken pillow we had at college.
Oh, those were the days.
Oh, the days.
Okay, we ready?
That was for a photo, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, good. We just didn't do it for fun.
No, we didn't just do it just for fun. Okay. No, it was kind of a creepy photo, frankly, in the end. But somebody wanted us to do it, and we did stupid things when someone said do it in college. In fact, I think that is the definition of what going to college is. If someone says do something stupid, you do it.
Yeah, yep. I think we're a little too eager half the time. Okay.
Yeah.
except when the professors say you should do something smart, we're like, whoa,
well, yeah, no, who would do that? That's ridiculous.
That'll take time and effort.
However, getting this garbage bag to fit just right.
Duct taping a friend to a lawn chair and putting him in the back of a car. That's absolutely something we should do.
Yeah. Remember when we duct taped Garner to the skateboard and slid him into the girls' dorm with his mouth taped with a sock in it so he couldn't complain? Were you around for that?
I wasn't around for
that. That was good
times.
I
was living at his wife's
house. Steve was around.
I was around.
We actually sent him flying down the hallway, and his head like crash-banged the RA's door. And then we ran and booked it. He got fined for going in the girl's dorm after hours.
He got fined. That's the bomb.
Garner, if you're listening to this, we're very, very sorry. No, we're not. So does that mean I shouldn't join the First Church of the Terrors?
Right. Yes. Google that and see if that's funny. Okay, second.